to me. Oh, oh,
I despise. Live from New York City, it's the Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. Nice to have you with us today. And nice to have all the producers and the volunteers and all the people that have supported BAI during this attempted takeover of the station. I want to thank Mr. Schwartz. I want to thank the people who fought the good battle. And he did so pro bono and probably saved the station $150,000. Unfortunately, before we rejoice about being back on the air, hold that rejoicing, because there's things we must look at. The consequences of their actions could have already given us a poison pill. I'll discuss that at the end of the show. Normally, when I open up, I do always health and nutrition. Today, I'm going to postpone that because of some interesting insights that I've obtained over the last day, informing me that there is a movement afoot to bypass the states and to go for a federal legislation that would mandate every adult have a whole series of mandatory vaccines. And because we try to keep ahead of the curve, and because I have sources in a lot of places, being on WPFW for 36 years, every day, 5 days a week, 3 o'clock in the afternoon, it allowed me to meet a lot of people, make a lot of friends from Washington. They're concerned that the agenda, a big pharma, working with the different governmental agencies, is going to put this into motion, and they will exclude everyone who has a responsible voice from being in the dialogue. It'll be one-sided. They'll have Google, Facebook, Twitter. They'll have everyone on their side, all governmental agencies, 20 different governmental agencies. And they'll have all the pundits, the talking head, the charismatic and charming people, different scientists, medical doctors, all saying why we need at this time these mandatory vaccines. This is at the same time that they are implementing 5G, which, as you will see from an upcoming article we're writing today and tomorrow and the next day, will cause a pandemic of environmental sensitivity illnesses that will reach tens of millions of people just in the United States as well as around the world. And this at a time when they're censoring anyone who takes any issue with any of the established political class. It doesn't matter whether it's right or left. They're all the neoliberal hegemonic group. There's all one big club, and you're not in it, nor am I, nor would we want to be. But these are the people that control our lives. So this is important, very important, or I wouldn't have spent, along with Richard Gale, about 300 hours preparing this information. So we're going to do a special original investigative report today. I hope that if you find it of value, that you downloaded the article, which will be posted on prn.fm, that's prn.fm, and then share it with everyone, including every legislator in Washington. No, you need to send it to the media. They're not about to read this. Also, when we were off the air for 5.5 weeks, our office received over 1,000 phone calls, and Lou Anne Panessi received probably about the same number of people saying, what happened? Where's Gary? 1,000 times I suggested you write down a phone number. So if you never hear me on the air, you can always hear me over PRM, where I broadcast and originate my programs. It goes to our sister station, WBI, where I've been for 45 years, as well as all other stations across the United States, including our good friends up in Woodstock. And here is the number. So if it happens again, unless you don't care, then it wouldn't matter what kind of pipe music or pipe programming you get. You're just listening. But if you care about becoming active on these issues, write these numbers down. This is the Listen Live number. 774-337-6068. Again, 774-337-6068. But if you've missed a live program and you want to go to the archive and hear what you've missed for the last 5 weeks, Here's the number, and we have all the shows archived. 701-719-9976. Again, 701-719-9976. Call just from your regular telephone. I realize a lot of you don't have, at least some of the older people don't have the tech savviness to know how to get on the internet, but you don't have to. You can just make a call with your land-based telephone, or if you do have a computer, over your computer or a cell phone. That said, I have not gone to our series of answers from the audience because I knew a lot of you had asked questions, and I wanted to make sure that we were back on the air before I went back to that. And so as of tomorrow, I'll be going back to offering you, you know, answers or a form to offer your ask your questions. So that's good. And it's called our voicemail line. Here's our voicemail line if you have questions or comments. 862-800-6805. 862-800-6805. Now to our important story today. The title of this is The Vaccine Deep State by Richard Gale and myself. And it's been fully vetted both legally and for scholarship. Who coined the term anti-vaccine or anti-vax? The derogatory term anti-vaxxer, which has been championed by the media and the medical industrial experts who function as the media's pro-vaccine talking heads, are merely people who question the efficacy and safety of a heavy, loaded vaccination schedule for children. Almost everyone in America until recently was pro-vaccine. The vast majority of people today are pro-vaccine. Yes, you have millions of parents with children who have been vaccine damaged. That is an absolute fact, but they were all pro-vaccine. And by the way, this does not represent a small group of dissident individuals and parents. Rather, it represents hundreds of thousands, perhaps millions of people in the United States alone. They're finally asking why. Why was a completely normal child or infant, toddler, baby, or an uncle, aunt, grandparent who got the flu vaccine ending up in a hospital or with autism or neurological disorders or autoimmune conditions like asthma and chronic ear infections? Why are they so sick? The only difference in their life was the vaccinations. But the government says, not true. We are not to blame. All those vaccines you're receiving, they're completely safe and completely effective. Are they? A good journalist would want to know the truth and not start off by simply looking to parrot the government's official position. But that's exactly what's happening, especially in the New York Times, the Washington Post, and all the talking heads in the media. Now, we might consider mainstream news sources, such as the New York Times, once a highly respected newspaper, now, sadly, becoming a propaganda vehicle for manufacturing consent. Not my words. In his book, Public Opinion, political journalist Walter Lippmann coined the expression, the manufacture of consent, which was later, by the way, further elaborated upon by Noam Chomsky in his critically acclaimed book, Manufacturing Consent, The Political Economy of the Mass Media, published in 1988. Chomsky defines the mass corporate media as, quote, effective and powerful ideological institutions that carry out a system-supportive propaganda function by reliance on market forces, there's capitalism, internalized assumptions and self-censorship without overt coercion, end quote. Chomsky's insights remain every bit as relevant today for understanding the hidden motivations in today's media to promulgate the official medical establishment's vaccine doctrine and to demonize the opponents as they were over 30 years ago for manufacturing consent to America's support behind the Cold War. Remember, we wouldn't have been in Vietnam. we wouldn't have had all of our Cold War efforts with the Russians and the Chinese and the Cubans if it were not for the full support and unquestioning loyalty of mainstream media. They were proud of that. The media refuses to accept that those who have been vaccine damaged, and there are millions, or who have children who will suffer for the remainder of their lives with adverse vaccine events, have any legitimate right to speak their truth rather than being labeled as hysterical or crazy. All of these individuals and parents were pro-vaccine until they or their child became vaccine injured. Similarly, we saw the New York Times manufacturing consent for accepting falsehoods, blatant falsehoods, that Iraq possessed weapons of mass destruction. Remember that in Judith Miller? And this was true across all the mainstream outlets, including the Washington Post, Fox Network, MSNBC, CNN. They actually rejoiced that we were going to go to war. And the emphasis was on the newest, the latest, the most exciting technology, our planes, our drones, our missiles. But no one questioned, should we have done this? Except the ones you might expect, The Nation magazine and those on WBAI and other Pacifica stations. But we were tiny little insignificant voices compared to the gigantic spectrum of influence that the mainstream media holds. The Times fabricated that rationale to the public on behalf of the neocons in the Bush administration, who were determined to have a war. They wanted a war. They needed a war. While none of the journalists publishing these lies have taken any responsibility nor lost a night's sleep because their fakery led to the death of millions, displacements of tens of millions, the contamination of large sections of the world's population, including in Iraq, in Syria, in Lebanon. And unfortunately, with depleted uranium, that lasts forever. No. None. You'll find Judith Miller popping up as a consultant on Fox News. Why should that surprise us? Can you imagine that if you were a victim in the covert Tuskegee experiment that was carried out by the CDC over 40 years, and you were one of the people who had syphilis, who could have easily been treated and cured, but you weren't, because you were black, because you were not in the right class. And so you were simply a human guinea pig. Not the first time the CDC would use its own efforts to affect change and marginalize people as if they were all human guinea pigs. And all the other federal agencies that were aware of this went along with it. They simply wanted to see what happens to a person who has syphilis if we don't treat them, and how easy it is to spread among other people. It turns out it's very easy to spread, and you've never to this day seen a single article that shows how many people today are likely to have congenital syphilis, meaning you won't test for it normally because no one in your family is supposed to have it, but it's passed on in the genes, so you're born with it. Nor do you see any photographs of those people with end-stage tertiary syphilis who were dying agonizing deaths. All the while, the people at the CDC were interested in how this was going. Then they lost interest. Did they go back and help these people? No. Did all these people and all the people they infected become compensated? No. No, that's not how our government works. It hasn't done that to soldiers they've tested chemicals on, nor prisoners, nor the poor. Wow. So what would happen if one day you decided to get together with a group of people who were all victims of the Tuskegee experiment, and you then question the CDC's wisdom? Ah, well, then things change. Now you challenge the CDC. Now the government and all of its agencies that are involved and the media, as dutifully as they are required to do, will make you out to be an anti-government subversive. Why? Because you'll be judged for those that you have judged, and you'll be judged as anti-authority. Oh, you mean that's one of the Diagnostic and Statistical Manual of Psychiatry, Volume 5, Delusional Persons Syndrome. So now you have a brain chemical imbalance and you're a threat to society and you need psychiatric counseling. You need drugs. You need electroconvulsive therapy. All because you dared challenge the authority of the government. Yes. You would be judged as anti-authority. Similarly, the CDC and the media, which has drunk the vaccine regime's Kool-Aid, is attempting to cast a net around those who oppose their authority by labeling them anti-vaxxers. It is not unlike being opposed to our invasions in Iraq or Libya and Syria, and then being accused of being undemocratic and opposed to freedom because that is the moniker the government promoted to initiate its wars and foment regime change. We're bringing democracy and freedom to these countries, and that's what the media supported. The logic is completely reversed in order to generate and execute a faux public sense consensus. Unlike the theatrical charade of America's political discourse, when narrative directly impacts government-supported private financial interest, such as the pharmaceutical industry sales, then open freedom of speech and debate are smothered. According to Chomsky, quote, the smart way to keep people passive and obedient is to strictly limit the spectrum of acceptable opinion, but allow a very lively debate within that spectrum, even encourage the more critical and dissident views, end quote. Now, this strategy works, according to Chomsky, when people believe they are actively engaged in the democratic process. However, for controversial issues that directly discredit industries that economically rely upon special science, what we call proprietary science, such as genetically modified crops, artificial pesticides, and pharmaceutical drugs and vaccines, the public has no voice whatsoever. Rather, opposition is ridiculed, and consent is manufactured in the shadows and through a wide network of media and internet resources to reach the public's ears. There is perhaps no other area of so-called scientific progress that has relied upon more deceptive and misleading research and a distortion of facts and statistics than in the modern medicine's religious belief in vaccines as a miracle to protect the world's population from infectious diseases. The distortion and exclusion of scientific evidence, the reliance upon cherry-picked studies and blatant corruption behind the vaccine research to further vaccination campaigns and compliance inquisitional assaults on the medical voices of reason who demand honest and open dialogue about vaccine safety and efficacy has turned into a media war. Popular scientific consensus has yet to tackle the growing uncertainty gap to identify the most probable causes of childhood neurological disorders and increasing rates of autism, asthma, allergies, autoimmune conditions, including the role of toxic vaccine ingredients such as the adjuvant aluminum compounds that can play in these epidemics. There's a doctor, a professor, highly respected, well-published, Dr. Stephanie Seneff, S-E-N-E-F-F, at MIT. She says that the autism rate can be projected to reach 1 in 2 boys in the next 5 years. Unfortunately, the vaccine deep state is silent over this urgent debate, and the media won't touch this because it would have no reasonable or scientific explanation of how we went from 1 in 10,000 to 1 in 2 in such a short period of time, since about 1988. And even with all the scientific evidence, the mass media continues to parrot the CDC's mantra that there is no further debate to be pursued as to whether vaccines contribute to neurodevelopmental disorders. It's been decided. No, it hasn't. If you've read the opinion pieces in the New York Times and Washington Post or listened to television commentators, you'll be left with the impression that there is no evidence-based facts to offer a legitimate challenge to the assumption that all vaccines are effective and safe. Nevertheless, there's a large group of board-certified pediatricians and immunologists and toxicologists and research scientists who have reviewed volumes of peer-reviewed literature to support their criticisms of what the media wants us to believe. But you'll never see anyone from that group cited in the mainstream publications or invited on multimedia to debate. We have invited dozens of individuals over the years to come on and debate us. They won't. Because we've done probably close now to 20,000 hours of research over the last decade on this subject alone. We have our facts from their peer-reviewed literature. They don't. But they have the media. Therefore, they don't need facts. All you need is someone at the New York Times, and there's at least seven reporters we've identified who are pro-vax and anti, with a bias, those who would question it. So the media has created the illusion that only a small group of activists, parents, and renegade physicians oppose vaccines. In turn, they are attacked with the unfounded charge that they, the unvaccinated, put society's health at risk. But there's no evidence of that. One recent example occurred in Israel. Professor Yehuda Schoenfeld, by the way, he is one of the most respected immunologists in Israel and now heads a center for autoimmune diseases at Sheba Medical Center, Israel's largest hospital. Oh, and he's also a member of the Israeli Academy of Science and Humanities, and he also sits on the editorial board of dozens of medical journals, and he has published innumerable papers in peer-reviewed scientific literature. In fact, he's regarded as one of the most prominent world experts in autoimmunity. But now, he's being viciously attacked by a group of Israeli doctors who accuse him of being a danger to public health because he has questioned vaccine safety. Now, this group wants Dr. Schoenfeld silenced immediately because he's written extensively on the role of aluminum adjuvants leading to a condition he called autoimmune inflammatory syndrome induced by adjuvants, or ASIA, A-S-I-A. Not surprisingly, much of the assault against Dr. Schoenfeld is being fueled by the vaccine deep state in the U.S., primarily by two of the media's pro-vaccine poster children, Dr. Paul Offit, the Children's Hospital of Philadelphia, and his partner in vaccine propaganda, law professor Doris Reese at the University of California. Reese also blogs her opinions to discredit anti-vaccine voices for the Times of Israel. There's your connection. And has contributed to fomenting opposition to Dr. Schoenfeld. She is also one of the leading legal supporters for California's regressive vaccine mandates. Both Offit and Reese are advocating for Dr. Schoenfeld's removal from his hospital position and his sitting on medical journal boards. Dr. Schoenfeld is an example of what happens to any scientist, any physician, even any journalist who questions vaccination. How long do you think a journalist would last at the Times of London, the New York Times, the Washington Post, the Miami Herald, and any of the other major Los Angeles Times, San Francisco Chronicle, if they were to come out and do a really honest piece on vaccine safety and efficacy that showed that we have been lied to? Do you think it would ever be published? Therefore, how can we trust anything written about vaccines by anyone in the mainstream media? That is the conundrum. However, I have a solution. Please take note of this solution. We can ask journalists six basic questions to determine their journalistic integrity and honesty. One, have you interviewed the leading vaccine critics within the medical and scientific community? If so, which ones? Two, have you honestly investigated the scientific literature to review the toxicological evidence about vaccines' harmful effects? If so, how many articles did you review? Which ones did you review? we have thousands of just on the toxicological elements of vaccines that we could share with you. So how can you say that you understand how toxic a vaccine is without using this simple, very uncomplicated notion? And that is that if you went into a doctor's office and you had the doctor put all the ingredients that are in the MMR vaccine and the Gardasil vaccine, maybe five or six other vaccines that a child would get all at once, and you put all those into a cup, and the doctor says, now drink that. Well, that doctor would be immediately disbarred. But what if the doctor took all those ingredients, put them into a syringe, and then injected into your bloodstream, bypassing all the body's natural defense mechanisms? The doctor would be rewarded, not punished, but praised. So before you write about something, educate about something. And we have a functionally illiterate media. It's not that they're unaware of the truth. It is that they choose by intent not to engage it. They're certainly intellectually capable. They come from fine backgrounds. They're highly educated. And they can deduce real from unreal. But they don't. Next, have you reviewed the actual transcripts of the CDC's senior immunologist on vaccines, Dr. William Thompson, who provided evidence into the tens of thousands of pages that the MMR vaccine is associated with autism, yet this was systematically covered up by the agency? And if you don't want to read all the pages, well, we have an unedited audio clip of a conversation I had with Dr. Brian Hooker, and he explains it. He apologizes for the cover-up. He apologizes for the bad science. So what would the New York Times do? What would CNN do? Now, there's a lot of African Americans at the New York Times. It is a paper of substantial diversity, as are the other networks. So why don't you have all of the African American journalists then look at whether or not this represents institutional racism? And is this just not a continuation of the racism that caused the Tuskegee experiment, and also going clear back, our government had sponsored way back eugenics with the founder of Planned Parenthood? Now, a woman's right to her body and her choice is her right, and I hope that she thinks well and makes a decision with all facts entertained. But what most don't know is that Margaret Sanger was a rampant racist. But if you're going to tear down statues of people who have engaged in racism historically, why not tear down Margaret Sanger's? Does that cause a conundrum? I think it does. And would you, as a journalist, then advocate that all the preachers, the ministers, the rabbis, the imams, have their congregation begin to protest and take to the streets, create a new, not on the environment, but on vaccines, a new cry, shut down this agency and its racist policies, and tell the truth that we now have upwards of 100,000 African-American boys who have autism spectrum disorder or other neurological disorders, according to the information that was supplied and the statistical analysis, because of Dr. Thompson and the CDC from top to bottom, racism. Which journalist would have the courage to do that? Which journalist would have the courage to ask one of the largest non-engaged political groups in America, religions? When was the last time you saw any of them protesting anything, unless it was something personal to them? But this is a big issue. This is an issue that you cannot sweep under the rug. But I'm sorry, you can't. They did it. So if someone, an entire institute with all of its members, are engaged in institutional racism, shouldn't that be an issue? Is that not worthy? Or are we just going to allow hundreds of thousands of more black kids to be damaged? This is what we raise, and this is what any journalist should raise. Next, Have you reviewed Robert Kennedy Jr.'s release of the Simpsonwood meeting transcripts that provided conclusive evidence that the CDC's own research showed a vaccine-mercury autism connection, and this, too, was intentionally concealed at that meeting and from Congress and the public? And should not every one of those people from the World Health Organization, the CDC, the FDA, and all the pharmaceutical industry representatives, they were all at that meeting. They knew that 100,000 children, based upon the Vera Stratton study, had been statistically significantly damaged from vaccines, mainly from mercury, and they hid it. Shouldn't they all be held accountable? There's no statute of limitations legally for murder and for crimes against humanity. Who has the courage in Congress to call a hearing on that and invite Robert Kennedy to that? No one. It's never going to happen. They haven't even brought over from the CDC any of the people, including Dr. William Thompson. There's no one in Congress that has not been touched at some level by the pharmaceutical companies. Also, have you reviewed the politics behind the 1986 National Childhood Vaccine Injury Act and the subsequent Vaccine Injury Compensation Program to understand how the pharmaceutical industry received a pass, get out of jail free, to avoid being held legally accountable for vaccine injuries? It was all political and all economic. Why don't you research the people who were involved in that lobbying effort who shortly thereafter left Congress and went to work for the vaccine company? Now, that's a pretty quote pro. How about, have you interviewed and sought documentation from any of the people that we've met, we've spoken with? Dr. Suzanne Humphreys, Dr. Nancy Banks, Dr. Brian Hooker, Dr. Lucia Tomjevic, Dr. Lawrence Palfsky, Dr. Christopher Exley, Dr. Tatiana Obenhansje. These are just a few of the outstandingly credentialed individuals who have spent thousands of hours each researching the safety and efficacy of vaccines. Have you spoken with all these people? If not, then how can you possibly know the extent of how science has been manipulated and used? These are scientists. These are physicians. These are board-certified pediatricians, some. So they're smart. Are you telling us you're not, as a journalist in the New York Times, willing to interview some of the smartest people in the room who would challenge your pro-vaccine beliefs? This is only the beginning of what needs to be done before citing or interviewing any of the most ardent pro-vaccine advocates, such as Paul Offit, Senator Richard Penn, Dorit Reese, and we have yet to find any mainstream journalist whatsoever or whosoever who has made an effort to investigate any of the above. None. Zero. Zip. To sustain the nation's vaccine rates, to preserve corporate profits, that is paramount. And to keep Americans convinced that vaccines will protect their children from infectious illnesses, the CDC requires a dynamic marketing and public relations apparatus. Remember, you're told that we have a real serious measles epidemic. So we did the actual statistical analysis. We looked at the death rates from measles for 19 recent years, and we couldn't find a single death in those 19 years. But we did find, according to the CDC's own statistics, 109 deaths from the vaccine for measles. So let us review. Deaths from measles, an infection, not a disease, where you create natural antibody protection for the rest of your life, zero. Deaths from the vaccine, 109, and you don't have lifetime protection, and you're shedding that vaccine through your mouth, through the air, and therefore highly probable you're going to infect the people even in your own home or classroom. So that's where we're at this moment. So the CDC needs taxpayer dollars, which it gets, and they have to train journalists to defend the federal agencies and the pharmaceutical industry's national and state vaccine agendas. The broad network of journalists are employed by mainstream media companies, magazines, newspapers, and freelancers, and provide the CDC with a virtual army of publicists to propagandize its message. Threats, fear-mongering, and outright hatred written towards vaccine opponents, those are commonplace in the mainstream journalism's narratives. What they all share in common is a glaring ignorance or denial of an enormous body of scientific literature that calls the CDC's lies and deception about vaccine safety into question. One vehicle for manufacturing consent is the CDC's Association of Healthcare and Journalists. This is a joint fellowship program. Scores of health editors, writers, reporters throughout the nation's leading media corporations, publications, MSNBC, NPR, New York Times, Reuters, The Los Angeles Times, San Francisco Chronicle, just to name a few, and these are all listed on the fellowship's webpage. We're not guessing. We're reading. They pride themselves. They have become full-time propagandists for the CDC, and they pass through the CDC's Atlanta campus for a week's worth of intense instruction in national public health policy. According to their own fellowship information, journalists are indoctrinated in conventional federal health policies regarding epidemiology and global disease, pandemic flu preparedness, vaccine safety, and autism. They also receive training in, quote, navigating databases such as Behavioral Risk Factor Surveillance Survey and CDC publications. To assist their research and writing, afterwards, when you've gone home, well, you can just be assured that you're going to get publications to propagandize the CDC's ideological talking points to increase vaccine compliance and receive notices and pre-written scripts about stories to report on their news outlets. So the CDC's close relationship with the media has been in place for at least 20 years. Let me give you an example. During the 2004 National Influenza Vaccine Summit, then director of media relations at the CDC and spokesperson for the National Immunization Program, Glenn Nowak, presented the agency's, quote, seven-step recipe for generating interest in and demand for flu vaccinations. His PowerPoint presentation outlines a concise public relations campaign, along with a timeline covering the flu season for journalists and media agencies to follow for the sole purpose of increasing flu vaccine rates, or vaccination rates, I should say. The outline includes specific periods during the flu season when the media is recommended to get on the ball here and induce and increase public fears about the pending dangers of influenza and even death. In defense of the CDC's PR efforts, Nowak publicly stated on national public radio that the vaccine, quote, manufacturers were telling us at the CDC that they weren't receiving a lot of orders for vaccine for use. It really did look like we needed to do something to encourage people to get a flu shot, end quote. 5 years later, during the H1N1 swine flu non-epidemic, we observed and reported how the CDC's flu propaganda storyline recommendations continued to be put into practice to the letter by the New York Times, Washington Post, and almost every large television and news network. Now, these operations are not limited to news firms. There's another organization that has remained relatively hidden from the public's eye that no one dares criticize, because when you do, expect a response, and that is the Hollywood Health and Society, HHS. Its headquarters in the Norman Lear Center, the University of Southern California's Annenberg School of Communications. According to its website, quote, HHS provides entertainment industry professionals with accurate, timely information on health storylines. It delivers consultation, writers, and scripts for television, Hollywood films, and documentaries. And who offers this expert consultation? Well, the CDC, the National Cancer Institute, the Office of National Drug Control Policy, and of course the world's largest private financial source for vaccine development and propaganda, Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. Unbeknownst to many, even the Council of Foreign Relations has publicly come to the defense of the vaccine manufacturers and continues to publish articles that denigrate vaccine hesitancy. During a misperceived swine flu threat in 2009, the council took an active role to breed public fear about the epidemic that never happened in order to push more flu vaccines. The organization's global health program has worked closely with Bill Gates' Global Alliance for Vaccines and Immunizations. More recently, the Council on Foreign Relations member, Claire Felter, has taken the World Health Organization's talking points to charge the, quote, anti-vaccination movement with threatening to undo years of progress made against a range of preventable diseases, end quote. As with the majority of the major players in the deep state, hypocrisy often runs rampant. Embracing a strong anti-China position regarding that nation's communist government, the Council on Foreign Relations has challenged the Chinese government's legitimacy after riots over the administration of, quote, substandard, end quote, vaccines that turned violent. Yet at no time do we find the Council on Foreign Relations interviewing a single person who is an expert on what's wrong with vaccines and how we've gotten this exponential rise in autism and childhood neurological disorders. Why? Why the utter neglect and failure to honestly investigate the causes behind this epidemic that is destroying more families than recent measles outbreaks ever could? Well, we decided to investigate. And this undoubtedly raised the question, why in the world is the Council on Foreign Relations involved in the vaccine business to begin with? Besides the Council on Foreign Relations' commitment to the World Health Organization's global health agenda, and among the Council's corporate members, we found three of the five largest pharmaceutical companies, and they all make vaccines: GlaxoSmithKline, Merck, and Pfizer. Now, I wonder if they had anything to do with the Council on Foreign Relations' interest in vaccines. Each of these firms has stacked up many years of civil lawsuits, medical cover-ups, and adverse drug effects, falsification of medical data, and a trail of pseudoscientific nonsense to expedite their revenues from drug and vaccine sales. And over the years, the Council on Foreign Relations has functioned as an effective incubator for forging alliances between large multinational corporations and government and multilateral agencies. Obama's cabinet, yeah, that Obama, was packed with Council on Foreign Relations members. Oh, but so was Bush's. And so was Clinton's. And so was Bush Sr. So, who contributed to the signing of the DARC Act to squash states' efforts to label genetically modified foods? For those who are vaccine hesitant, one of the most frustrating concerns is legislative complacency at every level of the government, the White House, Congress, and throughout the nation's federal health agencies to make concerted efforts to invest in the most serious questions of the vaccine safety debate. Now, though many Trump supporters believe that once president he would address the plight of parents with vaccine-injured children, it came as no surprise that he would backpedal 180 degrees. In the aftermath of the measles outbreak, Trump adopted the vaccine deep state's agenda when he told CNN, quote, they, the children, have to get the shots. The vaccinations are so important. This is really going around now. They have to get their shots, end quote. There is utter silence in Washington about the long-term consequences of where the American population is headed as more and more vaccines get added to the CDC's vaccine schedule. Scientific denialism is rampant, and the nation's vaccination policies are criminally medieval, based upon faith rather than reason. This includes efforts to fund independent studies to confirm or negate many of the more disturbing conclusions found in much of the peer-reviewed literature. Among them are, 1. The role of rising toxic levels of aluminum adjuvants in fully vaccinated children with neurodevelopmental disorders compared to unvaccinated children. The vaccine deep state categorically denies that aluminum in vaccine has any role. More disturbing, our federal health officials have been fully warned by experts in the field. This is how to end the autism epidemic. Attorney J.B. Handley provides excerpts of letters sent by three of the top researchers in aluminum toxicity to the CDC, the FDA, and the National Institutes of Health. These are three of the top experts in the world on aluminum that goes into vaccines. When was the last time you heard any of these people actually quoted? Were their peer-reviewed literature studies cited? You haven't. We will cite just briefly Professor Christopher Exley, Keele University in the United Kingdom. Quote, I'm an expert in the field of aluminum adjuvants and aluminum toxicity. I've been working in this field for more than 30 years, during which time I've written in excess of 150 peer-reviewed scientific publications on this subject. I solemnly declare that more research on the role of aluminum adjuvants in vaccines and neurological disorders, including aluminum and its impact on autism spectrum disorder, is essential and urgently required. Dr. Romain Gerhardy, University of Paris, quote, I'm an expert in the field of aluminum adjuvant toxicity in humans and animal models. I have been working in this field since the initial description of aluminum vaccine-induced macrophagic myofasciitis in 1998. Since that time, I've written 40 peer-reviewed scientific publications and one book on the subject. I strongly support the contention that aluminum adjuvants in vaccines may have a role in the etiology of autism spectrum disorder. Dr. Christopher Shaw, University of British Columbia, quote, we have studied the impact of aluminum adjuvants in animal models of neurological disease, including autism spectrum disorder. These studies and the broader existing literature regarding aluminum toxicity leads almost invariably to the conclusion that aluminum, in any chemical form, is always neurotoxic when administered to humans. Further, I am convinced that aluminum adjuvants in vaccines may contribute to neurological disorders across the lifespan. It is my belief that the CDC's claim on its website that vaccines do not cause autism is wholly unsupported. End quote. Also, the CDC and FDA do not require vaccine makers to test vaccines against scientifically viable placebo controls with an inert substance, such as saline, a salt solution. Rather, all clinical trial tests the vaccine against a false placebo that includes toxic ingredients such as aluminum adjuvant, polysorbate 80, and genetically modified yeast that had never been tested separately for safety, minus the viral component. The exception is Gardasil, which tested the vaccine against two placebos. Ah, one was saline. However, their final results provided to the FDA for licensure combined the two placebos to mask the increase in adverse effects. That's fraudulent. After many petitions and even recommendations from congressional subcommittees convening to study the autism epidemic, the CDC continues to refuse to fund independent studies comparing the quality of health between vaccinated and unvaccinated populations. Clearly, if there was nothing to hide and vaccines are perfectly safe, this would be a slam-dunk study to silence vaccine opposition. Such studies have been done independently and outside the vaccine deep state. The nonprofit group Generation Rescue, in collaboration with the notable opinion poll organization Survey USA, completed a survey of 11,817 households responding to their survey, and it included 17,600 children to compare the rates of various neurological disorders, as well as asthma and childhood diabetes in vaccinated versus unvaccinated children. For all vaccinated boys, meaning from 4 to 17 years of age, there was an increase of 155% in neurological disorders, 224% increase in ADHD, 61% for autism among the vaccinated. For all boys and girls, there was a 120% increase in asthma among those vaccinated. An entire reevaluation of the herd immunity theory is urgent. The herd theory, the belief that if a sufficient percentage of the population is vaccinated, then a given infectious disease can be eradicated, that has never, never been scientifically confirmed. It is not valid. Swedish television reported that in 2014, the Council of Foreign Relations accidentally released a report, and that report identified those developed countries with the highest rates of disease outbreaks. The Council's report found that the most highly vaccinated populations are also those with the greatest number of outbreaks of those same infectious diseases. This was especially the case for measles, mumps, rubella, polio, and pertussis outbreaks. The United States, number one. So we're doing the most vaccines in the world against rubella, mumps, polio, pertussis, and yet we have these outbreaks in the vaccinated group. Canada, the European Union, Australia, New Zealand, and Japan, each with the highest number of mandated vaccines, led the list of nations with those same diseases for which the public was vaccinated. The Office of Medical and Scientific Justice, which analyzed the report, concluded that the Council's report clearly suggests the theory, quote, of herd immunity is failing or was flawed to begin with. Now, given the repeated instances of infectious outbreaks in populations with 94% or more vaccine compliance and the emergence of new viral strains, the concept of herd immunity should be forgotten. The office offers several possibilities to explain the report. Earlier, a far greater blow against the efficacy of the measles vaccine came when Dr. Gregory Poland, editor-in-chief of the top journal on vaccines in America, called Vaccine, he's also the founder of the Mayo Clinic's Vaccination Research Group, published a surprising statement that the measles vaccine has a poor record of efficacy, despite the high 95% measles vaccination compliance of children entering kindergarten and the CDC's propaganda that the vaccine has defeated the virus. Measles outbreaks are rising. Dr. Poland does not believe this is due to unvaccinated individuals, but rather the failure of the vaccine. Another example is in Mississippi, with the highest vaccination rate in the country. The state has shown significant increases in whooping cough cases, with only 9% of those infected being unvaccinated, which means 91% of the people were vaccinated. Across the nation, the most highly infected are those who have received three or more pertussis shots and boosters. Several years ago, the Australian government's National Center for Immunization and Research of Vaccination Preventable Disease found that the pertussis vaccine's effectiveness is waning far more rapidly than expected. So the life-threatening failures of the FDA's fast-tracking pharmaceutical drugs and vaccines should be an issue. The pharmaceutical industry loves fast-tracked approvals because the necessary clinical trials do not require any long-term clinical effects from human trials. Only studies on surrogate markers are reviewed. These are short-term observations on whether there is any sign of a drug or vaccine being effective. Besides, such trials are invariably far cheaper the shorter they are rather than long-term studies. So there's a considerable cost savings. Last year set a record with 73% of all newly approved drugs having been fast-tracked. There are many dozens of examples of these drugs eventually being removed from the market or being given black box warnings for severe risks noted only after the product's release. The National Women's Health Network conducted a study to record the rates of drug makers completing the necessary efficacy and safety trials following their drugs being fast-tracked through the regulatory system. The study's conclusions were 58% of the fast-track products only had a follow-up clinical trial of 5 years and or more in delay. Some didn't even have any follow-up studies performed. The worst case of a vaccine being fast-tracked was Merck's human papilloma vaccine Gardasil. Rushing this vaccine through the regulatory hurdles is an example of gross criminal negligence, in our opinion. During the clinical trials, 2.3% of the girl enrollees came down with autoimmune illnesses up to 7 months after receiving the vaccine. 17 girls died. Nevertheless, without any compelling evidence, the CDC states none of these deaths were due to the vaccines. How do they know? Did they do the autopsies? Did they have toxicologists do it? No. Gardasil was fast-tracked nonetheless with further investigation without any investigations. And according to Robert F. Kennedy Jr.'s calculations, 100 times more Gardasil recipients are likely to suffer serious adverse events from the vaccine than they are to be protected from cervical cancer. In addition, Kennedy observed, quote, many of these diseases were serious. Blood lymphatic disease, anemia, endocrine disorders, autoimmune disorders, GI and Crohn's diseases, ulcerative colitis, vaginal infections, musculoskeletal injuries, arthritis, neoplasma, Hodgkin's disease, neurological diseases, psychiatric diseases, depression, reproductive and breast cancer disorders, menstrual irregularities, and pain. Over 3% of the girls, 1 in 30, in both groups required surgical and medical procedures. And of course, we are not finished, but we're out of time. Last year, I might mention, the pharmaceutical people spent $228 million to make sure that that was spent in lobbying efforts. And there are 1,400 big pharmacy lobbyists in Washington, D.C., and 64% of them are former government agents. So that is just the beginning of this story. And we are continuing to challenge that there's any sense of objectivity in the journalistic field in mainstream media. So before you hear what someone has to say on vaccines, ask them, have they done their homework? And then ask them, prove it. I'm Gary Noll. This article, entitled Deep State and Vaccines, will be posted now on prn.fm. That's prn.fm. I'll have some more to say on tomorrow's program concerning BIA and its future, and Pacifica and its future. Have a nice day, everyone.